Welcome, and thank you for listening to this recording, part of the Comprehensive Opioid Abuse Program, or COPE, podcast series. COPE provides financial and technical assistance to states and units of local and Indian tribal governments to plan, develop, and implement comprehensive efforts to identify, respond to, treat, and support those impacted by the opioid epidemic. Since 2017, BJA has supported innovative work on these COPE sites across the nation. Funding and programmatic support for COPE is provided by the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, or BJA. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of the U.S. Department of Justice.
Hi. Today we're talking to Sheriff Kevin Coppinger of Essex County, Massachusetts, and we're going to discuss with him the role of what jails can do or what role jails can play to respond to the opioid epidemic. So without further ado, Sheriff Coppinger.
Well, thank you, Andy. It's a pleasure to be here. Just to provide a little background for the audience, I was a police officer for 34 years in the city of Lynn, Massachusetts. I came up through the ranks the last 7 as chief, and then a couple of years ago I decided to get into the political business by staying within the criminal justice system, and I ran for a county sheriff, and I succeeded in that role. And I've been glad to have this new position because as we talk about the opiate epidemic, from the police background now transitioning to the correctional background, there most certainly is a commonality there that I think we can work upon. I'd like to use the word exploit for success, but there's a lot to it. Having worked, as a police officer, I saw the beginning of the opiate epidemic several years ago and how it's really gone out and affected so many people in so many walks of life. I can honestly say it does not discriminate for any reason on any particular group, and it's devastating society today. So to really try to address your question, when you say how can the jails combat the epidemic or how can we work to improve it, I think you'd have to take a step back and look at what the jails are today. Because of the epidemic and the explosion of people who have been thrust into the criminal justice system, a lot of our correctional institutions, including jails that I work at, have now become the epicenter of what do we do with these people? Should they be in a jail? Should they be in a treatment facility? Should they be in a medical facility? And it's a tough call because obviously there's been laws that have been broken and there's, the criminal justice system has done its job and has sentenced these people to our jails. So when we have them in there, today's jails and houses of correction have to focus on our goal is, the traditional goal of jails is care, custody, and control of inmates. I would add one more goal. We want to return them to society, back to the communities they came from, in a better shape than they showed up at our door, whenever they came in. So first and foremost, when an inmate comes to the jail, they go through what we call intake. There's a full physical assessment as well as a needs assessment done. And if they have an opiate or a drug, or let me rephrase that, a substance abuse problem, we need to know what that is. Is it alcohol? Is it drugs? Is it heroin? Is it fentanyl? Is it cocaine? Is it marijuana? What could it be? We need to focus on it. And then a lot of what we do in jails today focuses on programming. We have a variety of programs inside the institution to address just that. But one that I'm very, very much, we've had some successes with is our detox program. We run 2 detox programs, one for men, one for women. They're 28-day programs each, 42 beds in each, and they're located within the jail, but they're separate standalone entities. The inmates are let's just call them clients for sake of argument. But the clients in both the detoxes do not mingle with general population, although they can see the inmates out inside the jail, out through the windows. But everything's done in the buildings that they are. They sleep there, they eat there, they have recreation privileges there, they have classrooms there so we can do programming. So the beauty about the detox program is it goes through the criminal justice system. We work with the drug courts in our county, along with the district attorney, defense counsel, probation, police officers, and community resources. So if we have an individual who's eligible for the detox, they go to court, they work out with those individuals I just mentioned, they come up with a plan. If the judge approves the plan is referred up to the sheriff's office. We have the final say whether or not they go, but generally speaking, we always go with the court's recommendation, and then we'll bring the individual into the program.
And these are generally pre-trial at this point?
Good point, yeah, they're all pre-trial.
Okay.
Sometimes people come back and do it again, and they're mostly low-level crimes. We're not talking about murderers or rapists or armed robbers, we're talking about folks with what we call low risk. Maybe somebody with it could be driving under the influence charge, it could be a shoplifting charge, disorderly conduct, petty theft, these type of things. Folks who are addicted and really committing crime to maintain their addiction, generally speaking. So we get them in there, put them through the 28-day program. There's a lot of individual counseling sessions with experts, and I would just stop for a minute and just say that although we do have correctional officers here for security purposes, the individuals that run the program are healthcare and mental health professionals who are there to do the programming to the best level possible. So after the 28 days, if the clients succeed, they go back in front of the judge in the court, and now the judge has options, depending on the individual's case or their previous status. They could be released, they go back to their home, maybe go back to their job, hopefully go back to their family, go back to their regular life. Maybe they got to go home on an electronic monitoring bracelet, which we can handle for them. Maybe they got to go on probation. Maybe they got to do so many hours of community service. Maybe they might be released to a sober house, a private-owned sober house, for additional programming and living in a better situation than maybe they couldn't if they went home. Or track two, as we call it, they come back to us at the jail. Maybe this is another.
Let me interrupt for a minute. Does the jail and the treatment provide a aftercare plan if the judge goes along with it, so they're set up into treatment in the community at that point?
Yes, absolutely. From day one when they get intake, we start to build that plan. And so as they go through, they go through the intake classification I mentioned. Once they hit the detox, they meet with the counselors. They come up with the treatment plan while they're incarcerated for the 28 days. As we get towards the end, we expand that treatment plan to when they're released, where they're going. One of the things that we're really pushing, we started a new program in January of this year, about 6 weeks ago. We're really trying to strengthen our reentry initiative, where we're reaching out to a lot of partners across all spectrums, both private and public sectors, to help us with this treatment plan. So the goal being give the clients, upon release, they have resources in the community where they can go. Those resources could go from official state agencies, again, the courts, police, whatever, Department of Public Health, Department of Mental Health, to faith-based organizations, to healthcare organizations, to any social service agency or just any group that might want to help. The goal is to give the client a chance to succeed, give them that, we call it like a virtual toolbox. We're going to say, okay, here's some resources you need when you get back into the community. Here's some phone numbers to call. If they're on medically assisted treatment, and we do Vivitrol shots upon release, they know how to get to the Vivitrol shot, where to go, when to go, and how to get it, how to pay for it.
They get their first injection in jail before they're released?
Yes, 48 hours before. Before released.
And then tell them where to go for the second one when they get out.
Yeah, we'll help them, we'll get them back on health care insurance, and we'll already have it set up with a health care organization in the community so they can go, give them the date. And the other piece of this we just put recently added to the puzzle here is we have recovery coaches. So the recovery coaches will know when that date is, and they will follow up. They'll follow up with the client during the several weeks as soon as they get out. But specifically, they'll be on.
Do the recovery coaches meet the clients when they're still, before they're released?
Yes, they'll come in.
Okay, so they know who it is they're going to meet on the outside.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the recovery coaches actually help with the programming during the time of the detox. Mm-hmm. They'll come in, they'll teach classes, and they do one-on-ones with them.
Okay.
So they establish a rapport. So you're right. So once they leave, they know that person. It's not just a new face. They've already developed a relationship, hopefully a trusting relationship, and that's just another resource to help them.
How many recovery coaches do you have?
We have two. This is fairly new. Mm-hmm. We got a grant through the PARI organization PARI stands for Police Assisted Addiction Recovery Initiative. It was based out of Gloucester, Massachusetts. It's become a national trend across a lot of law enforcement agencies. And we were lucky enough to get a grant through AmeriCorps, who had partnered with PARI. So these recovery coaches are funded for them. But they're a huge initiative. These folks know the business. A lot of the recovery coaches either have been there or know someone who's been there. So they know what these individuals, our clients, are going through. So it's a big help. One statistic to throw out there is the average stay in our institution is 9 months.
For the sentenced inmates?
For the overall average. Okay. Overall average.
Pre-trial and post-trial.
Yeah, pre-trial and post-trial. So if they get released and they're going to go back to using opiates or any drug, they're at 120 times greater chance to overdose than the average person who's out on the street on a normal basis. Because while you're inside, obviously you're not using drugs. So when they go out, if they don't have the proper treatment and plan in place, they might go right back to the needle, might use the same amount of heroin or the fentanyl they used before. Their body has gotten weaned off of it, and they shoot up and they die. So we got to be really, really careful on that. That's where these recovery coaches play such a huge role.
How many have graduated from the program in the first 4 months?
The first year, a little over a year, we've had, I believe, out of 1,100 in the men, we've had we got an 87% success rate with the men, 80% with the women.
Completing the 28 days.
Completed the 28 mm-hmm. days, yeah. As far as, you know, success rates, we still in tracking them mm-hmm. over time. We talk about the Vivitrol shots. Right. We've issued, we've given about 120 Vivitrol shots. Mm-hmm. Preliminary research on that looks that's going to be very promising, because those numbers, as far as in terms of recidivism, seem to be very strong, and they're looking good. We're trying to get some more time mm-hmm. between the time of release so we can get some accurate numbers on that.
Overall, have you seen many of these clients come back again, or?
It's not perfect. Uh-huh. Based on my old career and my current career, I've got to know a lot of people in the treatment business. I always ask the question, what is an average success rate of a drug treatment program? And no one can give you a straight answer. For some folks, they could be multiple times. Could you take it 10 times to go through a drug program, sure. treatment program? Very few people hit it correctly off the first bat.
How many have died?
Of our folks, how many yep. died? It's very few. I want to say it's under five. I don't have the stats with me, and I can certainly get back to you with an accurate number. But it's minimal. But you've got one thing to remember, though. The folks that are in our institution are really and truly at the bottom of their life, and if I put that right. They've already been arrested. They're in jail, even though it's not regular jail. They're mm-hmm. still inside. There were desperate measures need to be taken. So working with this group we mentioned before, everybody in the court and then the folks we have here, this is almost like a last chance. And I don't mean that from the court's point of view, from the individual's chance. So we do everything in our power to really, you know, incentivize them to succeed. And that's where we say, you're not in jail. You're getting that taste of corrections. You can see it. You can feel it. You don't want to be out there in the regular population. So you got your 28 days. Stick with the program. So when you go back, when you go back to your community, you will not come back to the jail.
What about post-trial? What about those who are not going to be diverted pre-trial? They're sentenced for a crime, and in Massachusetts, unlike most states, misdemeanors are 2.5 years maximum in the House of Correction.
Correct.
What program do you have for sentenced inmates?
We have a lot of different programs. We do have regular drug treatment for the inmate, the regular inmate population that aren't eligible for the detox. Same thing, not as intense, but it's within general population. Outside treatment providers come in and they go over the hazards and try to give them some life-changing mm-hmm. skills. We do a lot of occupational training. So when the inmates leave us, we want to at least get them a chance to get a job someplace. Jobs like, we started a new program up at our Lawrence facility on fiber optic cabling installation. That's kind of the new thing now with a lot of stuff going on. We got fiber optic. A lot of them are in the food service. They're ServSafe certified, so they can work in restaurants. We have OSHA training, so they can work on construction jobs. We do, educational-wise, we do a lot of things. We do the HISET program now, which is the old GED, to get the high school equivalency. And we've taken that one step further now. We work with Merrimack College, one of the academic institutions in our area, who now come in and do a sociology course And upon
for credit.
Oh, yeah. Great. And so upon we had a little graduation. Mm-hmm. We had actually two graduations last year, but it's to the first one I went to. This young man came up. He's probably 21, 22. You can tell he'd been around the system quite a while. Skinny, a lot of tattoos. Looks like he was well seasoned in the criminal justice system. And he walked up and he got his certificate from Merrimack College. And he was crying. And he's like, he never ever thought he'd get out of high school, let alone go to college.
For a success.
Yeah, for a success. Yeah. And it was like he just gave him the winning lottery ticket.
And Sheriff, you have a RSAT program, a residential pod for substance abuse treatment in the facility?
Yeah.
And what kind of reentry program do you have for your inmates leaving after a sentence?
That's part of what I just mentioned before. Okay. We just
Same program
same
as
thing.
For the pretrial?
Yeah, we merge them both in. A lot of the folks, the detox folks, for those pretrial, aren't eligible for work release. The rest of the clients, particularly the sentenced inmates, are eligible for work release. So we're really pushing that back into the communities. And if folks from the community is listening to this, they have to realize, because a lot of times you get the not in my backyard attitude. Mm-hmm. But we have inmates from all 34 cities and towns in our jurisdiction, inside our institutions, and someday they're going home. As I mentioned before, the average stay is only 9 months, so they're coming back. So we're looking for resources in those communities now. For employers, it's awesome. If they, a lot of times they can't get staff. We will work with them if they want to hire some inmates. The benefit to the employers is they get a tax break, so they make out. And the benefit for them too is we deliver and we pick up. So we will take them from our facilities, bring them to work every day, pick them up. So you're guaranteed you're.
So they have some training before they are.
Oh, they'll have training.
Yeah.
They have accountability.
Yeah. So the employer gets comfortable with them.
Yeah, exactly.
And are they offered Vivitrol too, the sentenced inmates?
Sure.
Same.
Again, it's all
same
for
thing.
That.
And recovery coaches, are they dealt?
Yep.
So
yep.
Okay.
Yep. All
so treated the same
plan.
Way.
Yeah.
And in most of your inmates, do they end up on parole when they get out, or they mostly max out their sentences, or what's their legal status for most of them?
A lot of them just max out their sentence, okay. Wrap up as they call it. But a good number of them are going out on probation or parole, depending on how their sentence or where they are in the.
Have you noticed any difference between the two in the terms of motivation?
Sometimes the ones that want to wrap up, they don't want any help. They just want to do their time.
Get out.
Chances are they're coming back. Mm-hmm. That's the scary part. It's the ones that want to succeed, and that's what we try to do every day, is just try to give them some incentives, some motivation to take advantage of the programs that we have in there.
On the medication-assisted treatment, what's your experience? They have one injection before they leave. It's good for 28 days. Do we know how many follow through for the second injection when they get out? Or?
Again, we started the research on that. Mm-hmm. We were looking to get a full year. We started that January of 2017, so we just finished the year. So we're going back. It's a tough thing to track because, number one, we got to go back and talk to the inmates and recontact them. Sometimes mm-hmm. you can't find them. And, you know, are they going to tell us the truth, or did they miss a couple months and try to get back? It's a vague thing, so mm-hmm. it's guesstimates, but... the initial recidivism rates, like I said before, look like they're a lot less if the individuals stay on the Vivitrol. But I'm hoping by late spring I'll have a better grasp.
Do you
those
know,
numbers.
In general, what the recidivism rate is in Massachusetts for county inmates? Do we know what that is in the state?
I know in my place it's about 43%
come back.
Yeah.
Within what period of time? A year.
Within a year.
A year.
That's a year. And we define recidivism as a new arrest. A probation violation or a new charge.
It brings you back into
the system. Okay. So I know the Vivitrol, like I said before, that looks good. I think that's really, we're looking at about, and again, these are very rough numbers, roughly maybe the mid-30s, 30% recidivism rate mm-hmm. for those that are on Vivitrol. And the detox itself is, that's a little higher. But again, mm-hmm. we're looking at the criteria or the makeup of those individuals where I said before, they're really at the bottom. Of their hopefully at the bottom of their troubles.
Yeah. Just a few more questions. They go through your pretrial. They're given a chance. They blow it in the community. They slip. Will they be admitted again? Can they be detoxed again?
It's possible. Okay. They need to go in front of the judge mm-hmm. and convince him or her, mm-hmm. as well as the DA and obviously their own defense counsel and probation. So. A lot of the answer to that question, we focus that back on the courts.
Okay.
If the courts think that's going to happen, then we will take them back, generally speaking.
And one last question. When we say detox, is this a medically supervised detox or cold turkey, or what is your detox program?
That's a good question. It's by the time they get to us, obviously they've been arrested, so they don't come up to us right away. It's sometime over. If you get arrested today, you may be a couple weeks down the road, you may be a couple months down the road. Obviously, the client has to want to go in the detox, so it's voluntary. So if they are still detoxing, yeah, they could be detoxing within our facility. So that 3, 5, 7 days, depending on their own personal, you know, makeup. We do have medical staff in the unit 24/7. And even little things like we have snacks available on the unit during the detox time, so they can eat at their leisure. They don't have to wait for the specific hour when the meals are served. So I'm no expert, but they say, you know, when they're hungry, they need to eat to help their health. So we provide that to them. So and once they're over the detox, then they focus in on the programming for the rest of 28 days.
And for a community that wants to emulate this program, how difficult was it to get it off the ground? What advice do you have for them? Where do they start?
First, call us,
okay.
Email us, whatever works, come talk to us. The first thing is you got to get buy-in. I would start with the local district attorney's office, the local judiciary, go talk to them. As I said, I'm a former police officer. I would go back to the police offices. You need their buy-in, too, to make this successful. And explain it. I think you need to look at money. You need to see what this is. The average cost of an inmate in Massachusetts, or at least in my facility, is about $43,000 per year. So if we can put a person in that detox for 28 days and get them out, they don't come back, I'm saving money. So that's how I look at it.
Have you seen the decrease in population?
Yes, we have, yeah. And now, to be honest and to be fair, is it all attributable to the detox? I don't know. My gut's telling me it's a big piece of it. Because we're putting people back out, they're not coming back. But you have to weigh it, because I'm going to have, if these the detox wasn't here, I'm going to have these individuals anyway. So I think it's money well spent. Mm-hmm. But I think the perception is people have to understand it. And when we explain it to a lot of judges, especially we get new judges who never heard of it before, they might not handle cases like this, that we either meet with them or maybe they'll come up for a tour. They're like, wow, this is pretty good. And I can honestly say, if I ever shut the detox down today, my phone probably would not stop ringing with complaints from all walks of life, not only the judiciary, but you know, the law enforcement, criminal justice types, families, social workers. I have not heard anybody that makes any negative comments about the detox. It's just, it's a chance. It's an option for the inmates or the clients to succeed.
It probably, given waiting lists, you probably have the quickest detox in the county at this point.
That's true. And like I always say, the good news is you're not paying for it. The bad news is you've been arrested. So it's a trade-off. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. So it is taxpayers' dollars, but I will argue with anybody that I'm actually saving taxpayers' dollars if we can get them to succeed. That's why it's so critical to have good professional people in there.
You talked about buy-in from judges and prosecutors to get them to send you the clients, et cetera. And obviously the citizens, because you're an elected official.
Yep.
Have you run for election yet? After the first
no,
establish
no.
this
no,
program
I guess, yet? I have a 6-year term, thank
six
God.
Year so term, all right.
I don't worry about that for
all right.
a while.
So that's still that's still hanging the balance. Yeah. What about from your own staff, correctional officers who've been from there a while, who saw their job as mostly custody and maintenance? How are they adjusting to the role of such intensive pre-trial activity?
It's a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. You know, we obviously run a large institution. We average about 1,200 inmates. What a lot of people don't understand about county corrections, we have a little bit of everything. We have murderers, we have the armed robbers, the real hardcore drug traffickers, and then we have the low-level crimes, you know, the disorderlies, the driving.
Because you have everybody pre-trial.
Pre-trial.
If they're about to go to prison.
Yeah, and if they get sentenced over 2.5, like, you know, off they go. So we've got a little bit of everybody. So correctional officers are used to dealing with everybody across that spectrum. And then we ask, okay, fine, we're going to try in this little more softer approach. So we look for volunteers. And I have
volunteers among your correctional officers.
Yeah, right? and I do have to work within a collective bargaining agreement with the union. So, but we don't have a problem with volunteers. They do get it. We allow the correctional officers to wear the soft uniform, as we call it, which is really a golf shirt with the emblem on it, and khaki pants, not the traditional correctional officers. But it is something somebody has to believe in, because you're on the floor with them all day long, and you're actually getting to know these.
So it's direct supervision.
Absolutely. You know.
And is there any, in your detox unit, people are going through detox, they're new to the prison, they're only there for 28 days, they don't really know the rules yet. Is that a problem in terms of order, maintenance, or what
no,
is
because
the behavior like?
On day one, when they come in, they're explained to the inmates, the clients, they're explained what the rules of the institution are. Everybody gets a handbook. In the handbook, it details what it is and what the repercussions are if you violate the rules. Mm-hmm. Now, the beauty about the detox is if you violate the rules, chances are you're out. There's not a middle ground here. You know, you either follow the rules because you have to be committed or you're gone. One thing we do.
And when you're gone, then you go to the regular general population.
No, you go right back in front of the judge.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
You got to tell the judge.
You've lost your 28-day program.
Yeah, yeah, you got to tell the judge what you did, and we'll leave it up to the judge. Yeah.
Which doesn't bode well for how you're going to be sentenced if you're found guilty then.
Case in point.
You've already screwed up.
Yeah, yeah. So that's huge.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, good. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. No, thank you very much. This was great.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To learn more about how COPE is supporting communities across the nation, visit us at www.coperesources.org. We also welcome your email at cope@iir.com.